Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's conference call for the first quarter 2016 results. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session for analysts and institutional investors, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone this conference call is being recorded today, Wednesday, May 10th, 2016, at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I will now turn the conference over to Martine Ben-Mouillal, Senior Communications Advisor. Please go ahead.
Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique des résultats du premier trimestre de 2016 d'Innergex Énergies Renouvelables. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here today with Mr. Michel Letellier, President and CEO of Innergex, and Mr. Jean Perron, Chief Financial Officer. Please note that the presentations will be in English. However, you are welcome to address your questions either in French or in English. Nous vous invitons à poser vos questions également en français. I would also like to point out that journalists are invited to call us afterwards if they wish to address any additional questions. In a minute, Mr. Perron will provide some details on our financial results for the first quarter, ended March 31st, 2016. Next, Mr. Letellier will provide an overview of our operating activities and outlook. We will then open the Q&A session with both senior executives. The financial statements and the MD&A have been filed on SEDAR and are readily accessible via the Internet. You may also access the press release, the financial statements, and the MD&A on the Innergex website in the Investor section. During this presentation, we will refer to financial measures such as adjusted EBITDA, free cash flow, and payout ratio that are not recognized measures according to International Financial Reporting Standards, the IFRS, as they do not have a standardized meaning. Please be advised that this conference call will contain forward-looking information that reflects the corporation's expectations with respect to future results or developments. For explanations concerning the principal assumptions used by the corporation to derive this forward-looking information and the principal risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those anticipated, I invite you to consult the first pages of the company's MD&A as well as the annual information form. I now turn the conference to Mr. Perron.
Thank you, Martin. Good morning. The quarterly results for Q1 2016 shows production of 119% of the long-term average, due mainly to above water flows in all markets but Ontario. Wind sector was at 98% of its long-term average. Revenues for the quarter were $4.8 million higher than in 2015. This 8% increase is attributable mainly to better results from the hydro facilities operating in Quebec compared to the same period last year, and to the contribution of the Turtaway Creek hydroelectric facility commissioned at the end of 2015, which was partly offset by lower production at some of the other facilities in British Columbia. Adjusted EBITDA for the quarter was $4.7 million higher compared to Q1 2015 for the same reasons explained. Finance costs totaled $19.5 million compared to $16.4 million in 2015. This $3.1 million increase is due mainly to the lower negative inflation compensation interest on the real return bonds attributable to lower deflation during the period and to expense related to the Turtaway Creek facility commissioned in October 2015. Other net revenues stand at $0.2 million compared to a loss of $68.4 million in the first quarter of 2015. The change for the period comes from the $68 million loss on derivative financial instruments that was realized in 2015 from the settlement of bond forward contracts upon closing of the Upper Lillooet and Boulder Creek project financing. Unrealized net gain on derivative financial instruments stands at $1.3 million compared to a gain of $12 million in the first quarter of 2015. Since April 2015, Innergex used edge accounting on most of its financial instruments, therefore minimizing the volatility of these line items as the variations of the mark-to-market values and the unrealized gains and losses of those instruments are, for the most part, now recorded under other comprehensive income. Excluding the impact of derivatives on the 2016 first quarter, net income would have been at $6.8 million compared to $6.2 million in 2015. Overall, a very strong first quarter allowed us to start the year on a positive note, mainly due to the BC and Quebec hydro sector and the newly commissioned Treadway Creek plant. Our trailing 12 months free cash flow ending on March 31, 2016 reached $77.2 million compared to $82.2 million for the same period ending in Q1 2015, which benefited from a very strong Q4 2014 results. Our payout ratio stood at 84% compared to 74% in 2015. The decrease in free cash flow is mainly due to lower cash flows from operating activities before a change in non-cash operating working capitals and realized losses on derivative financial instruments. The increase in the payout ratio comes from the lower cash flows and to the higher number of common shares outstanding by virtue of the conversion of a portion of the 5.75% convertible debentures into common shares and the dividend reinvestment plan, partly offset by the purchase and cancellation of 1,190,000 shares under the normal course issuer bid. Since the beginning of Q2 2016, our production has been above the long-term average at most facilities. The production of Q2 will also include our newly acquired wind farms in France since April 15 of this year. This concludes my review of the results. I'll be happy to answer your question later on during the call, and I'll turn it back to Michel.
All right. Thank you, Jean. Good morning, everybody. I'm very happy to report this nice quarter. Obviously, we're not working harder, and it's Mother Nature that's helped us, but it's nice to have one of those here and there, so quite happy. And as Jean is pointing out, I think that Q2 also will be looking very strong, especially in BC. We're doing okay in Quebec, a little bit higher than average, both on hydro and wind. And Ontario is about okay as well. But again, BC is very, very strong. So we should have a Q2 a strong Q2 over and above our budget, but still we're in the middle of a quarter. Just wanted to come back on our project under construction. As you know, they're progressing very well. 2016 is a very important year for us because we're putting into service and we're finalizing construction on close to $1 billion worth of capital investment. So it's a very important year for us. As you know, as soon as those will be done, 2017, cash flow will be much stronger than 2016. So again, very focused on delivering the project. If we start in Quebec with Mesgi-Gugjuksun project, the 150-megawatt wind farm, is on track. The construction has started full-blown from the slowdown in winter time. There's no work in the Gaspé Peninsula mountain range in winter time. So all the pieces the turbine are on delivery schedule. All the roads, concrete foundation were done. So we'll start erecting towers soon. Very happy on the schedule so far. So we don't see any setback, both on cost or schedule for Mesgi-Gugjuksun. So everything is on green side for this project. Big Silver, same thing. Big Silver has been a very easy project to do. We didn't have any problem, if you remember, in the tunnel. Everything was done on schedule and a little bit earlier than we had anticipated. So we should be, now we're in commissioning mode, so that means that all the machines are being installed and electrical component and automation are being put together. So we should be starting production, not necessarily COD, but we should start and produce our first kilowatt somewhere in July. So that's a little bit earlier than we had anticipated. So far, so good. Upper Lillooet and Boulder still on schedule for very early 2017 for Upper Lillooet and a little bit later for Boulder. We're still working on the two tunnels. Those are the main place where we have to focus, because all the other items are advancing very well, and they're almost done. As an example, the Boulder power station is fully installed. The mechanical machine are done. All the automation is prepped, so we only need the water to test the machine. So very well advanced, the transmission line as well. We're not expecting any more overrun or upper and Boulder, as mentioned earlier on in the first quarter of this year, actually, when we announced the annual financial report. So Upper and Boulder still working hard on the tunnel, but hopeful that the schedule will be maintained, and we're trying hard to accelerate it, but we have to go through the tunnel first. Again, if we switch now to the post 2016 or 17, what we want to accomplish is filling up the future development of the company, working hard. Again, as you've seen, it's not been very long that we did announce the investment in France. We're very happy with that acquisition, as we mentioned earlier. One thing that is important also is that we have established a footprint into the development of a new project. The team is working hard and well, and they're successful in initiating a discussion with landowner and securing land rights, and we're happy with their results so far. So we're very hopeful that we'll have, like we were hoping, to have 100 megawatt to 150 megawatt of project to be developed in the FIT. The idea is to try to have as many megawatt possible into the queue before the regime in France could change. So working on that direction, and happy to see the result there. Little acquisition in Walden, we were happy to conclude on that. Working now, we are on site, and we have started to make some modification on the mechanical aspect, and it seems to work very well. That we like these type of acquisition where, and I would say, a small hydro that has not necessarily been fully looked upon, and fully, I think that we can have a better production, just like what we've done in Miller Creek. We think that we can create synergy. We think we can manage a little bit more production out of the turbine. So working on that, and we're establishing a schedule. As we said, we have a CapEx to invest in Walton. But so far, what we've seen is encouraging. It's not a big investment, but we like those little tuck-in acquisition where we can create value by using our own people and create a little bit more synergy and better operating standard to do a small hydro. So very very happy on that side. We're busy also in South America, mainly Mexico and Peru. Mexico is a very dynamic market, very competitive though. When I say dynamic, is that they're changing the rule, they're opening up the market, so it's creating opportunity, but a lot of new legislation, new rules, so we have to adapt. We're working hard in keeping in touch with all those changes and in adjusting ourselves. We're working on tangible project. We have been participating in the first subasta. It's the first RFP. We didn't win anything, but we've learned a lot. There's another subasta, another RFP due to deposit the offer somewhere in September. So the intent is to participate also there. Not to put too much hope on the result there, because it's, like I said, it's very competitive. We want to make sure that whenever we're making initial step in new market, we can feel comfortable with the investment. So we're patient, but we're learning throughout the process. We're making a good relationship with local developer and contractor. So establishing ourselves in that market is slow, but we want to make sure that if we commit, we'll be happy with our investment. And we also are looking into Peru, where there's some small hydro with existing PPA that needs equity and partner in engineering to finalize the project. So working on that as well. Not huge investment, but investment that seems to be interesting in terms of return. And it's a smaller market than Mexico, but it's a market that still has some good potential for hydro, small and medium size. So we like Peru on that aspect. And the contract are made in U.S. As well for at least 20 years. So interesting development there. I've been there in the last month. So interesting development that in that position. So even if we don't have anything concrete to announce, I think we're advancing well and we're learning a lot in those markets. Again, I think that our forecast for 2017 looks even stronger, and we're by the quarter that passed, and we're advancing construction. We feel very, very comfortable with those numbers. I think they're a little bit conservative to some degree. We're investing, and bear in mind that the forecast we're giving of about $107 million of free cash flow, it's after investing internationally. And in our budget, we're having about $11 million worth of prospective expenses in 2017 in order to match our expectation of going abroad internationally. So those investments, we're very hopeful that they'll start to pay out in the near future. But just bear in mind that $107 million is net of about $11 million of prospective expenses. On that note, I would open up the Q&A.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now conduct the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be pulled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if you are using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for our first question. Your first question comes from Rupert Merer from National Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Great quarter.
Thank you.
Quick question on Mexico. So you talked about the fact that the RFP process there is quite competitive, and of course that was primarily wind and solar, I believe. When you talk about your participation in that RFP, is that in wind and solar as well, or does this include your hydro initiatives in Mexico?
It was only wind. The hydro, we're trying to have direct negotiation with CFE, not necessarily to put those into future RFP, but the rules are not super clear on that aspect. One thing that Mexico will have going also is eventually for capacity, because the one that just finished didn't have a good signal in price, relative in pricing for capacity. So it was only for energy and green attribute. I think that somehow, somewhere down the road, Mexico will have to come up with some kind of capacity payment that may help also hydro. There's the hydro that we're trying to look into in Mexico has some capacity component. So we're hoping that eventually hydro will be also benefiting for capacity payment down the road. But as we are focusing now for the second RFP, we're looking into wind and solar. Mind you, that solar was driven by a very, very aggressive bid of one bidder, not to name them. Still try to understand what they're doing, but we're patient.
So with hydro, do you think there's also a political desire to have diversification there that might enable you to have a higher price on your hydro assets, or do you think that they will be viewed in competition with those solar and wind bids for the cost of energy?
For the time being, I think it's driven by competition, the price. But they, like I said, they are going to establish a capacity payment, and maybe in those they'll provide for some good good incentive. I'm sorry, to be able to deliver the energy at certain time of the day, which would help hydro, but it would also help natural gas player. Mind you, that hydro, depending on how you structure it, it can be very, very flexible, where sometimes natural gas, you need to make sure that you secure pipeline availability, and if it's only for a few hours and during the days and so forth, it's sometimes not be very easy to do, especially Mexico is tight on pipelines, so capacity on pipelines to deliver the molecule might be an issue. So we're still hopeful that we'll be able to find ways to create value with future small hydro in Mexico, but not necessarily just run over the river. There'll be some small capacity, a reservoir capacity, either for intraday, and intraday makes a huge difference in Mexico. So working on that aspect.
Okay, excellent. Then on Peru, you mentioned you're looking at a few potential projects that have contracts, not big investments. But when you look at partnering in Peru, would you be partnering with companies that have existing pipeline of opportunities as well, pipelines of larger opportunities, or do you see the organic growth potential there as something which will be more of a greenfield exercise for you?
Well, we'd love to have, and we're talking with a few developers. Peru has two distinct approaches. There's the bigger project, and they're, you know, 200 megawatt, 400 megawatt. There's a few of those that have been proposed and that are quite advanced. But those will be hard to develop in the near time, or in the near term, because the mining activities have slowed down, as they have slowed down around the world. But Peru cost of commodity to extract the commodities is one of the very low around the world. So as soon as commodity prices might come back, I think that Peru will see some activities, and that will generate more demand for electricity and hence maybe for bigger project. But in the meantime, they still have a program for 20 megawatt or less, and they have a commitment to come every 18 months or second year with RFP. So for the time being, we're looking into those smaller projects. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't be interested in participating or take a participation into a bigger project. But like I said, I think that the smaller one have a higher chance to be developed in Peru in the near time.
Great. Thank you. We'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Nelson Ng from RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Great. Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Just a quick clarification on the 2017 guidance. So you mentioned that you have about $11 million of prospective expenses included in the number. I was just wondering about, so the free cash flow increase was about $1.4 million, and I presume it reflects the last two acquisitions, but is it only $1.4 because you've also increased your budget for prospective expenses?
Yes, and also I think we're a little bit conservative on 2015. There's Walden that is scheduled to be shut down for some CapEx. So the acquisition of E.ON, the 44 megawatt, is not included because it's not closed yet. We don't see any reason why it would not, but since it's not closed, we haven't included the E.ON 44 megawatt that is under construction in the guidance.
Okay. And then I have a few questions on the Walden facility. So roughly how much are you looking to invest in the project?
We had an initial budget of something around $8 million to invest. I don't think we'll spend that much.
And that's on top of buying it for $9 million, right?
Yes. But I don't think, like I said, we were maybe a little bit conservative when we entered the negotiation and we made our calculation. Now that we have had access to the machine, we already made some changes to the machine that has solved quite a bit of the initial problem that the previous owner had. And I won't say it, it's a secret, but it's something that we have standard in many of our places, and for some reason it was not installed on those machines, and very, very little money to be spent, and it had solved a lot of issue. So, you know, those are not big numbers, but I like those pet projects. It's fun to create value on this, but it's the only thing, it's not a big project, but I think it will be more profitable than we had anticipated.
Okay, so that $8 million will be significantly lower, is what you're saying, right?
We think so.
Okay. And then, I guess, given your 51% ownership of the project, I guess, is it safe to assume that Innergex would receive, let's say, like over 90% of the project cash flows? I'm also assuming that you guys pretty much funded the entire acquisition price and probably all of the improvements?
That's a fair assumption, though. Yes.
Okay. And then one more related question is, I believe the PPA has expired, so I was just wondering, like, what the current price, power price you're getting is, also what...
That we cannot talk about. We're under confidentiality agreement with BC Hydro, but we cannot discuss the status of the EPA.
Okay, and you know... You're not able to kind of give a timeline of when you think a new EPA will be finalized?
Working on it.
Okay. And then just a quick question on the French acquisition. So I think the final acquisition price was about 5 million euros higher than previously announced. Was that just purely working capital?
Well, working capital is not also fully established as we speak. We still have some adjustment, and it was kind of based on the results that occurred at these facilities during the interim period between when we got the agreement in the fall about what was the way that we were going to buy it and what were the actual results during the interim period that we are benefiting. Because they were not entitled to put any money from these projects.
So we're paying for the cash, the cash that is in the LPs and the structures.
Okay, so the $5 million difference was essentially you're paying for the cash.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, and then just one last question: the Ontario LRP Phase 2. Like obviously you'll be participating this time. Are you focusing on wind, solar, or hydro? And I was wondering, like, what, like, in terms of phase two versus phase one, like, is there any factor or anything additional that you have now compared to what you had previously where you think you'll be more competitive or more successful during the phase two?
Yes and no. we're still working with ISO and hopeful that they'll listen to some of the participant comments. The big deception in Ontario, I think, and it's common for everybody, is that there's not much capacity on the line. For the time being, what they have described as available land for wind is not necessarily good news for good relationship with municipality, because the room or the capacity that is available is in an area where there's not much support for wind in Ontario. So I'm quite disappointed on that aspect, because the old idea of having points and making sure that community were consulted and First Nation was were invited to be partners and what have you sounds great, but unfortunately, whenever we had project, and not only Energex, but the industry had project that had the support, there were no capacity on the line. So I'm very disappointed on that aspect, because I think that on the long run, and I'm talking about the industry, Ontario is not doing the right thing, because if you're pushing 600 megawatt of new wind in places that people don't want it, it's not going to help the relationship between the population and the wind industry in Ontario. We're hopeful that somehow, somewhere, the ISO in their big and great wisdom will open up some area where it's less of a controversy with wind. But I'm cynical, but I think that it would be great for the future of the energy, renewable energy in Ontario. As for us, we have some good solar plan. We're learning, and we're talking with suppliers, trying to be more and more competitive. We're not that far last time, so we're working a little bit harder here this time. And as far as wind, we're going to try to be competitive as well. And if it's the game of Ontario to be in places where people don't want to, we'll see. But we're not the type of company to go enforce our project in court.
I see. And so will you also be looking at hydro as well, or is it mainly solar and wind?
Well, the problem, again, we have a couple of projects that we would have loved to propose in hydro in Ontario, but there's no capacity. The capacity, if you look at the new ISO map, it's basically, if you draw a 300 kilometers around Toronto area, that's about it. So, I mean, it's really silly, really, really silly what they're doing.
Okay,
They're making a bigger call with less and less capacity. The northeast is completely blocked. The northwest completely blocked as well. So, like I said, 90% of Ontario is a no zone for capacity.
I see. Well, thanks for the additional color.
Those
are my questions.
Your next question comes from Sean Stewart from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. Most of my questions have been answered. Just to follow up on your guidance changes, you explained the free cash flow adjustments. I just want to make sure I'm looking at EBITDA the right way. So it looks like there's a $16.5 million increase to about $312 million. Is that just the French operating assets included in that increase, or is there any contribution from what's under construction in that pipeline in France as well?
Beyond the 44 megawatt is not included in 2017, Stuart. So it's only
41 megawatt beyond is not included. So it's only the 7 that we made acquisition. But in the total, we for 2017, we always have included the projects that are under construction. That has not changed.
Okay. All right, the rest of my questions have been answered. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Ben Pham from BMO. Please go ahead.
Thanks, good morning. Sorry, I just want to get back to the guidance, maybe just not understanding it right. So I know you guys aren't including Yon in that outlook for 17 with the raise there. Was there anything else that you changed outside of the French acquisition with your assumptions and your guidance?
I think we increased about $3 million worth of prospective expenses.
Okay, so that's a little bit, okay. And then do you expect when you go perhaps update your numbers heading into next year with Yon coming in that the increase in free cash flow might be a little bit more proportional to the EBITDA increase that you got in France?
Yes and no, because we also have this structure with our green that is capturing a little bit of the early years of cash flow. So we'll try to give you a better idea over the, it's a little bit more complicated to look at the cash flow of the French acquisition, which are green. But let's say that the first 7 to 8 years is Argreen is capturing a little bit more cash flow than it's proportionate, and after that, then the cash on cash is going quite rapidly higher. I think that overall on our investment, we're looking to something close to now to after tax and after putting the edge in place. We're looking at something just below 10% internal rate of return. But the cash on cash is a little bit further down the road.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that. And the only other question I had is I want to understand better your Upper Alouette Boulder Creek protection. You talk about force majeure, I think 3 months or so. So are you fully protected from cost overruns? And then are you also then with the 90 days, is it more if the projects get pushed to second half of next year that you could be liable for some extra costs?
No, it was this was important force majeure for BC Hydro, making sure that our contract is still valid. So that's why we want to have BC Hydro to declare us as force majeure. So I think we had 93 days, mm-hmm. 98 days of force majeure. So it's just a protection to make sure that, and the lender like that also, that we have at least 6 to 9 months of buffer before theoretically BC Hydro could have canceled the contract because we wouldn't have met the COD date. But this is now quite comfortable. Overrun, it's just making sure that there's two issues with overruns. There's the tunnel that we were, as we mentioned in the past, we were exposed to the geotech and the type of rock class that we were facing. Mainly that we have four classes for class 1, 2, 3, and 4, and depending on how many meters you have of different classes, then you were paying by meter of advancements in the tunnel. And that has been covered, and I think we have been conservative in our forecast and updated potential warrant costs in Upper Alouette and Boulder. What you're talking is that if for some reason we would have been delayed a lot more, obviously the contractor could have charged us more mobilization and more time on site, and this is where we're protected with the insurance because of the fire. We were delayed, and those delays are now built up into the new schedule, and the insurance is covering us for extra cost of having the contractor on site for a longer period of time. Does that make more sense for you, Ben?
Yeah, no, that makes more sense. I just wanted to check the 90 days, how that fits in with the timing. So that's more BC Hydro, the contract. And then can you maybe just squeeze one quick one in? The geotechnical studies you highlighted, did you do a study recently? Is that why you highlighted, just to see if there's any impact on maybe production. Do you still need to do something there? Maybe just a quick update on that as well.
For the COD or for the expected construction cost of the tunnel?
Yeah, I was just thinking more, maybe just more about just the fires impacting the land around the area and maybe the water flows that could impact maybe long-term average production. Have you looked at that, or do you need to look at that?
But, well, we always look and ask ourselves some questions. But the fire, it's more for the accessing the sites, the hill or the slope that have burned are more susceptible for landslide and avalanches. So it's not necessarily for the operation, but it could impact the operation. As an example, if there's more landslide and we have to clear the road, but those are not huge landslide. But in health and safety governance or good rules, if there's some risk, especially during the construction, the forest ministry call for stop. Preemptive travel on the road. So those, we have some of those days of shutdown that are included in the schedule with the contractor, and that is also part of the reclamation that we have with the insurance, because obviously the consequences of the fire has create perhaps more of those stop work day because of a potential landslide. So that is also part of all the discussion with the insurance. But for, we don't see a big problem for operating after the construction. We would use a small truck and ADV, and so we don't perceive that as a super big problem down the road for operating. It might create a little bit more, planning to operate the intake, but we don't expect a big issue at all.
Okay, that sounds good. Thanks, Michelle. Thanks, everybody.
Pleasure.
Your next question comes from David Quezada from Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Morning, guys. My question has pretty much all been answered, but I wondered if maybe maybe I could just ask you first a little bit of color on how your early experience has been after expanding into France, and if being on the ground there has is resulting in a potentially greater flow of potential transactions or assets coming your way in the future.
Well, it's a very good point. First we feel more at home in France than in Mexico, in Peru. But also it's surprising how many calls we get now to either partner or being called in a very small auction that, obviously we were not a player until last year. So small outfit didn't necessarily knew us. And yes, we've seen a lot more activities and potential partnership with local developers. So we're very happy actually for the time that we've been there. We see quite a bit of activities, and we could repeat a couple of smaller transactions, and always thinking of creating value for the shareholder and the risk reward. We also are called for early stage where the project are ready for construction and they want us to participate. So yeah, definitely it's a good question. Thanks for asking. I had mentioned that, but we see a lot more activity in France, and maybe we could also grow from France to nearby countries. As soon as you put your foot in France, you're in Europe. So it's there's a lot of activities obviously in Europe, and given the exchange rate and when we put the hedge together, we get a little bit of a upside. And also, we have quite a bit of support from pension fund that like the type of transaction that we can put together. So again, we will be willing to do some financing engineering to enhance our return. So very, very happy with the investment we've done in Europe so far.
Okay, great. Thank you. Appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions at this time, please press the star followed by the 1. As a reminder, if you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Your next question comes from Jeremy Rosenfield from Industrial Alliance. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks. Just a few questions for you. First, on the output in the water in BC, in the past, I think that we've talked about sometimes in the spring during the runoff, water conditions can be maybe too strong relative to what some of the facilities can actually capture. So I'm just curious if that's been the case at all so far this year.
Yes and no. This year, well, last year was a very first quarter, very strong first quarter, if you remember as well. But there weren't much snow. It was warmer and a lot of, the precipitation came into rain. This year there were a lot of rain, but in higher altitude there were quite a bit of good snowpack. So the snowpack was at least at average, a little bit higher than average. So we're hopeful that the snowpack will help to prolong the good flows during the summer. Last year we had a very good strong first quarter and then an okay second quarter, and then it dies out quite fast because it was very, very warm and dry. So it's very difficult to forecast, obviously, but we're starting with more snow on the top of the mountain as last year. So we're hopeful that it'll be more of a regular summer in BC with glacier melt.
Okay, good, thanks. The second question was just in the MD&A, you had a commentary on the New Brunswick power market and the opportunity that you're looking at there. Can you give any more detail on that opportunity?
It's a good catch, Jeremy. We have an exclusive agreement with the Mi'kmaq, 90% of the Mi'kmaq, and we have proposed a wind project to the NB government. It was just last week or so. It was due last week. So the NB government will take a NB Power will take a closer look at the proposal. It was an RFP exclusive to being partner with First Nations. So my understanding is that there were us, the big majority of the Mi'kmaq, one project with the Maliseet, and one project with a small community of Mi'kmaq in New Brunswick. So we'll still work with our partner and the NB Power to try to negotiate an EPA there.
Do you have a timeline for when they're expected to get back to you, or is it kind of open-ended?
My understanding is that they will they're going to try to announce the final result by somewhere in September.
Okay. And then just turning lastly to Mexico, which we discussed a little bit, can you just sort of talk about when you think about Mexico and bidding in the future RFP, what kind of risk return profile are you thinking of the projects that you would be submitting, and what returns do you need, let's say, relative to projects that you would be doing, let's say, in France or in other jurisdictions?
Yeah, it's the biggest question that we're asking ourselves, and I'm pretty sure that some other investors are doing the same. For some reason, Mexico, for a lot of European companies, especially the Spanish company, they don't see a lot of premium in return in Mexico. It's a little bit surprising because for us, we think that Mexico would warrant a higher return. So we're adjusting, and like I said, Jeremy, it's hard to comment on our cost of capital or competitiveness when we enter calls. Obviously, every participant has his prerogative in trying to be competitive. But in general, Mexico is becoming a market where a lot of people are seeing it as, I wouldn't say fully mature, but as a fairly safe investment market. So we might be a little bit disappointed on that aspect, but we're still working, and we're trying to also to leverage our relationship with La Caisse de Dépôt that has a big commitment in infrastructure fund in Mexico. Maybe we're trying to find ways to reduce our cost of capital to be a little bit more efficient tax-wise also in Mexico. So all that is underway, and you can imagine that we're trying hard to have a decent return that, in my view, Mexico should warrant a better return than Europe. But
okay. No, that's good. Thank you for the additional detail.
My pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions at this time, please press the star followed by the one. As a reminder, if you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. Ms. Ben-Muyal, there are no further questions at this time.
All right. Thank you, everyone. We appreciate this opportunity to provide an update about our company. Please do not hesitate to contact us if you have any other questions. Merci à tous. Nous apprécions cette occasion de faire une mise à jour de nos activités. N'hésitez pas à communiquer avec nous si vous avez d'autres questions.
Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our conference call. Please note that a replay of the conference call will be available on the Innergex website. The press release, financial statements, and the management's discussion and analysis are also available on the Innergex website at www.innergex.com in the investors section. Thank you. You may now disconnect your lines.